That particular song has a lot of meaning to me. While I'm in the Philippines, I've been honored to be able to study and help in the preparing of men to preach. And at the end of our time, at the end of every class period, we sing that song, "I'm Pressing the Higher Ground." And I can tell you it's a pretty moving experience being 10,000 miles away from home with a bunch of men who are dedicating themselves to preach in a land that is very difficult and in a country that's very difficult. And there's not a dry eye in the house when we sing that song the last night that we're together after we've been together for 30 days in teaching and training. And that song always touches my heart because it does remind us that that's what we're doing. We're pressing to higher ground. Tonight, I want to continue a study together with you of the books of the Bible. As I began this simple series, it is to help us to better be able to do what God commanded us to do, and that is to rightly divide the Word of God. It is so tragic in the days that we live in that there are so many people who claim to be religious who have no understanding or comprehension about the true Bible story as it is given in His Word. What was even more tragic than that is that there are so many in so many churches across our country where Bible knowledge is not what it should be. And we lack teachers, we lack men and women who have the desire to teach, and more than that, we lack those who have the ability to teach because they do not prepare themselves by knowing and understanding the Word of God. I hope in some small way that when we're done with this series, that you'll have a greater appreciation and an understanding for the Bible. I want to talk tonight about the book of Exodus. The book of Exodus is indeed a wonderful book. It is a book that follows the promises that God made to Abraham. In Genesis chapter 12, God promised to Abraham that he would give him, with his seed, he would make a great nation. He would give that nation a land and through his seed, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. In the book of Exodus, we see the beginning of the first promise being fulfilled, and that is the nation that grows in bondage. Exodus simply means going out. It means going out, it means going away. And what it means is there's going to be an exodus, there's going to be a journey out of Egypt. The story of Israel is going out of Egypt is what's covered in the book of Exodus. 400 years had passed between the close of Genesis and the beginning of Exodus. And here is something that we need to remember in the Bible. Sometimes we read from one page to another and we think it's like the next day. It's not always the next day. And at the end of Genesis, it covers a period of time where Joseph has died and all the people that knew Joseph have died and no longer know Joseph and know about him and of God and his father Jacob. And there's going to be a time that things are going to begin to transpire. The new Egyptian rulers have forgotten Joseph and his good works. You remember Joseph, we talked about him in Genesis, how he was a man that was placed there by the providence of God that extended the life of the Jews as there was a famine throughout the world, and his father and his brothers came down there and were given grain, and eventually he brought them down to Egypt, and 70 souls went in to Egypt. But through the passage of time, Joseph died, and all those who were acquainted with him died. And there arose new leaders who did not know Joseph, and so they make the Israelites slaves. And they do that because of their alarming number. They are increasing, they are multiplying. Why are they multiplying? They are multiplying because God is busy fulfilling His first promise, and that is to make them a great nation. And so the Egyptians begin to wonder and worry that they're going to increase in number, they'll join their enemies, and they'll become one that will join the enemies that they have and defeat them. So before that can happen, Pharaoh decides to do two things. The first thing he decides to do is to make them slaves. But the more he oppressed them, the more they grew. So that wasn't working. And so then he decided that he was going to kill all the male infants born to the Israelite women. They were to be thrown into the sea. But the Bible tells us in Exodus chapter 1, verse 15 through 22, that the midwives feared God and would not follow the instruction of the Pharaoh, and they would not put the children to death, and so they were blessed by God for their faith. And there was one child whose mother placed her son in a river, and Pharaoh's daughter found him. Now, you can think that was an accident, or you can think that was just chance, but I believe that God is unfolding his plan, because that child is going to become very prominent in God's story. And so the mother became his nurse and raised him for Pharaoh's daughter. And so he was the grandson of Pharaoh, and he was raised with all the privileges of wealth. He was raised with the education in Egyptian culture. He was given all the privileges of being the grandson of Pharaoh. But through the providence of God, his mother became his nurse and told him about his true heritage, and that is being a Hebrew. And so as she raised him and he grew in prominence, this man's name is Moses. And Moses becomes a very prominent character as God carries out his plan that he determined before the world began. And so, hurriedly, we look at the first 40 years of Moses' life. And it's not, we don't have a lot of detail. We just know that he was raised in the house of Pharaoh's daughter. He was a grandson to Pharaoh. He was given a high position of authority. And the first 40 years of his life, he was there in Egypt. But, in Exodus chapter 2, verse 11 through 15, at the age of 40, while avenging one of the Hebrews, Moses killed an Egyptian. And he buried him, thinking that no one knew, that it was no one would find out. But then the next day, two of his brethren were fighting, and he tried to break them up, and one of them said, "Are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian?" And then he knew that this was known, and he knew if they knew it, Pharaoh would find out about it, and if Pharaoh found out about it, his life would be in danger. And so what he did in Exodus 2, beginning in verse 16 through 25, is he fled to Midian, and there he would tend sheep. And he would tend sheep there for 40 years. The life of Moses can be broken up into three 40-year periods. The 40-year period that he was in Egypt, the 40 years in Midian, and the 40 years that he will be in the wilderness. Now, this led to the burning bush. That's one of the most familiar Bible stories in Exodus chapter 3, first six verses. And in that, God called Moses for the purpose that he raised him up. He raised Moses up to deliver his people from Egyptian bondage in Egypt. Now, Moses is a lot like a lot of us. He's not sure God's got the right person for the job. He's not eagerly volunteering to do this work. And so Moses has some qualms about whether or not he was the right person to lead the people. And so you know what he did? He began to make excuse of why he was the wrong person. God told him that he would give proof that Moses was sent by God. One of the things that he worried about was when he went to the Israelites and when he went to Pharaoh, they're going to ask him, "Who sent me? And who am I that they're going to listen to me?" And so he was given two things that his staff would turn into a serpent. He had a staff that he used as a shepherd. He was told to throw it on the ground. It turned into a serpent. He was told to pick it up by the tail and to return to a staff. And that would be a miracle that would prove that he was sent by God. And then the second would be his hand would turn leprous and then it would become clean. His hand would turn white and it would turn leprous. He put it in his bosom and he would pull it back out and it would be clean again. And that would be a sign from God confirming. Now, brethren, here's something you need to know. What were these miracles given for? They were given to confirm something. They were given to confirm that he was God's man, that he was sent from God, so that they would listen to him. Now, Moses returns to Egypt in Exodus chapter 4, beginning in verse 18. But I want you to notice that Moses had to be convinced. He first said, I'm a nobody. They're not going to listen to me. They don't even know who I am. And then he said, I'll be with you. And then he said, well, you know, I'm slow of speech and I don't talk very well. And I'm really not a good orator. And you remember what God told him? God said, who made your mouth? Who created you? Who made your mouth? And then he gave him Aaron to be his spokesperson. And then he wanted to know, who did I say sent me when they asked me? And he says in Exodus chapter 4, God said, you said I am sent you. And that was the Jews would know that that was God. Now, you know what? One of my favorite Bible characters is Moses. And you know why? Because I can understand Moses. Because you know, for years I fought preaching. Do you believe that? They tried to get me to preach in the early 80s. And I used all the things Moses said. I said, number one, I talk too fast. Well, I was able to do something about that. And then I walk around too much. Well, I still do that. But I can preach and do that, I found out. And then I found out that the only thing holding me back was me. And you know what? That's what Moses learned. Moses learned to trust God. And that's what I learned to do. And when he trusted God, you know what? If you listen and follow the story in Exodus, Aaron might be his spokesperson, but as we go along in the story, you don't see Aaron. You see Moses. And you see Moses grow into the person that God knew he was. And that's why he chose him. And in Exodus chapter 4, we have the covenant of circumcision that is established. And then, in Exodus chapter 4, verse 27 through 31, he goes to the elders of the children of Israel, and they accept him as being sent from God. Now he has to do the real tough work. He has to go see Pharaoh. I want you to turn your Bibles to Exodus chapter 5. This is one of the great passages of the Bible. In Exodus chapter 5, he has his first encounter with Pharaoh. Afterwards, Pharaoh and Aaron went into Pharaoh. Thus says the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness. Now that was a very simple request. No difficulty in Pharaoh understanding what God wanted him to do. But notice his answer in verse number 2. In verse number 2, and Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go. God, from this moment on, is going to give him a personal introduction to who he is. And Pharaoh is never going to forget who God is. But you know what? This introduction is not just for Pharaoh. This introduction is not only for him, but for all the Egyptians, for the nations that will hear the events that happened in Egypt, and also for the people of God to understand how powerful and how much trust they should have with God because of the ability that he has. And so, from that point on, he begins to try to fight against God. And you know what he does first? Well, the Jews have too much time on their hands. And so what I'm going to do is they're making brick. And they're making brick because they're making cities and they're making things for Pharaoh. And he would bring them the straw and would bring them the bricks, and then they would make the cities. But now he determines he's no longer going to bring them the straw. They're going to have to go out and gather the straw. They're going to have to make the mortar. They're going to have to make the bricks. And their quota cannot be diminished at all. And now they won't think about going out to the wilderness in order to worship God. And you know, that didn't just cause a problem for the Jews. That caused a problem for Moses. Because now the Israel's officers reject Moses. They come to Moses and say, wait a minute. You came in here, you're going to release us. You've made us a stench in Pharaoh's nostrils. And now he's made our task even greater. And now we're even under more rigor in our bondage. And you've made us an enemy to him. And you know, Moses doubts for a moment. He goes to God and says, God, what are you doing? You sent me in to release them, and I'm not released. They're not being released, and now I've made it worse. What is Moses' problem? You know what Moses does? Moses questions God. Turn to Exodus 5. Look at verse 22 and 23. So Moses returns to the Lord and said, Lord, why have you brought this trouble on this people? Why is it that you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people, neither have you delivered your people at all. What's Moses' problem? He got the same problem people got today. When God says he's going to do something, I want it done right now. You said you let them go. They're still in bondage. Now it's worse. Why did you send me here? You know what he failed to understand? Same thing people today fail to understand. God works on his timetable, not yours, not mine, not anybody else's. God's going to bring them out, but God's going to do it by his timetable, by his planning. And Moses has to accept that. But brethren, Moses is not the only one that has to accept that. We have to accept that too. God does things according to his time. And so God, in Exodus chapter 6, he reassures Moses, I know what I'm doing. I sent you in to release them, and he will release them. But, what did God tell Moses? It's not going to be easy. He's not going to want them to leave. He's going to rebuff. He's going to reject. And it's not going to be done without a struggle. He told Moses that. But Moses forgot that. And so then he goes to the people and he reassures the people in verse 9 that God has not forgotten about you, that God will bring you out. Be patient. And so he's convinced that he goes back to Pharaoh in verse 10. And he makes his plea again. Let my people go. But Pharaoh is stubborn. And so what he does, he made Moses to be a god to Pharaoh. Now what does that mean? He made Moses someone that Pharaoh had to be respectful of. And one that he had to be fearful of. And you remember what he did. He threw down his rod, remember, to turn the serpent. And then remember what the magicians did? They threw their rods and they became serpents too. But there's only one little difference. Moses' rod swallowed up all their rods. You see, there were some things they could do by enchantment and magic, sleight of hand, but there were other things that they could not do. And when he refused to let them go, God says, oh, he's going to let them go. But before he lets them go, I am going to demonstrate to Pharaoh who I am by 10 plagues. He brings 10 plagues upon the nation of Egypt. Aaron's rod swallowed up the other rods. That did impress him. And then he sends the blood. Remember what he did? He stood out at the Nile River and everything that was in water in Egypt turned to blood. You ever think how much? Think about what havoc that would cause. All the fish would die. The river would stink. And there would be a stench. There would be no water to drink. And the water, the blood, was in the rivers, it was in the lake, it was in the Nile, it was everywhere. But you know what? Pharaoh's stubborn. You know, they were able to, with their enchantments, turn some water into blood, but they weren't able to do it to the Nile River. They weren't able to do it in the lakes and in the troughs, and so that still didn't impress him. And then he sends the frogs. The frogs, they look cute, don't they? Little children, they love frogs. They don't know any better. But think about frogs everywhere you go. In your house, in your bedroom, in your kitchen. Anywhere you go, there's frogs. You can't get away from them. They're everywhere. But they were able to create some frogs. So that didn't impress Pharaoh either. But you know what he did? You know what he did? He told Moses, I believe, send the frogs away. So Moses would go out, petition God, entreat God. God would send the frogs away. And then Moses would harden his heart and wouldn't let them go. And you know, they took all the frogs and they all died. And they just put them in heaps all over the land. Can you imagine how that smelled? Imagine what a terrible thing that had to be. Then he brings lice. We're not talking about a little lice. We're talking about a lice that covered the whole land of Egypt. The whole land of Egypt is covered by lice. But, God begins to do something different. This is not impressing Pharaoh. And he's not relenting. And then he brings a fourth plague, and that is flies in chapter 8, verse 20. But there is a distinction in this particular plague. There are no flies in Goshen. Why? Because that's where God's people are at. And so there's flies throughout. Now think about it. Goshen is in Egypt. But in all the places in Egypt, there are flies everywhere. But in that land of Goshen, where the children of Israel reside, where Joseph moved his father, in that land, there is not one fly. You think that would impress Pharaoh? No, that didn't impress him either. And so, then he sends a murine of cattle, and it begins to kill all the cattle in Egypt. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands of cattle are dying. And then he brings the boils that strikes every living thing in Egypt from their head to their foot. And then in chapter number 9, he brings the hail. Now, you've seen hail. You see the damage that hail can do. What would the hail do that was throughout a whole country? It would kill everything that was there. Nothing would be able to grow because it would be destroyed by the hail. But what the hail didn't get, in chapter 10, he brings the locusts. And the locusts cover the ground to where it's dark. You know, locusts just travel like an army. And it just travels and it covers the ground. And anything that's in front of it, it just eats it. And it stripped the land bare. And you know what? Then he brings the darkness. Now, you folks here are pretty close to Mammoth Cave. Some of you have been there. I went down to Mammoth Cave when I was was many years ago. And they took us down that one corner and put us in this room. And they shut that door. And I mean, there was darkness in there that you could feel it. How would you like that kind of darkness for 3 days? Where you could not even see your hand in front of your face. And what about in the land of Goshen? They can see in the land of Goshen, there's light, but there's light nowhere else because it is utter darkness. And you know, on a number of occasions, Pharaoh would try to negotiate with God. He said, well, you can go, but leave your wife and your children here. You see, he wanted to keep them. He wanted to give them something, but make them that they had to come back. He says, no, we can't do that. We all got to go. And then he said, well, you just take the cattle. You and the cattle go. Just leave your women and children here. No, we can't do that. And he kept trying to negotiate with God. And then he says, if you send these things away, then I'll let the people go. Now, I want to point something out here. There's two statements made in Exodus that get a lot of play. Two statements made. First it says, and Pharaoh hardened his heart. And then it says, God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Now those people who teach in predestination will use that statement to teach that Pharaoh didn't have any choice but to reject Moses because God made him to reject. No. You know what that would destroy? That would destroy free will. How did God harden Pharaoh's heart? How did he do that? Here's how he did it. He knew Pharaoh's heart. He knew that he was stubborn. He knew he was arrogant. He knew he was pompous. And he knew when he set the scenario that he had to humble himself, he knew that Pharaoh didn't have the heart to submit and to understand that he was not in control. He had too much pride. And God knew when this scenario was placed before him, how he would react. He didn't make it Pharaoh react that way. He already knew how he would react. Why did he know that? Because he's God. And so that's how he just set the table. And he let him make the choice. But you know how I know that he could make the right choice? Because he finally did. When the 9 plagues failed, that brought the 10th plague, the worst of the lot. And that was the death of the firstborn. And we read this in Exodus 11 and 12. But there is a very significant thing that happens in Exodus 12. And that is the establishment of the Passover instruction. Do you remember what they were to do? They were to take a lamb at twilight on the 14th day, or the 10th day, and on the 14th day, they were to kill it. They would take the blood in a bowl, and on the lintel post of their house doors, they would put this blood. Now, why did they do that? Because when the angel of death and the messenger of death came into the land of Egypt, and he saw the blood, he would pass over them. You know a song you sing in your book? When I See the Blood? Where did the thought of that song come from? Right here. When I see the blood. But you know what? This was an antitype. This was a shadow of something that God was going to do later. Because what is Christ called in the New Testament? He is called our Passover. And when does God pass over our sin? When he sees the blood. When you have the blood of Christ on your sin-stained soul, God passes over those sins. You see, this was a shadow. This was an antitype of something that God would have to do. Now, he gave very detailed instructions. There had to be a lamb, firstborn, without spot, without blemish, had to be killed on a certain night. It had to be eaten with certain types of herbs, and you could leave none of it till morning, and they couldn't come out of the house, and they had to put the blood on the lintels. And you know what people tell me today? People say, you know, God doesn't care about detail. Really? That's a lot of detail, don't you think? Now, what happened if the Jew said, well, I'm a child of God. I'm a Hebrew. God won't hurt my child. And he didn't put that blood on his door. What would have happened at midnight when the messenger of death came through Egypt? What would have happened if he came upon a house in the land of Goshen and there wasn't blood on that door? What would God have done? He would have killed the firstborn in that home. Why? Because that was God's instruction to gain the benefit. There's a very important lesson here, brethren, that God expects obedience to his instruction. And when that instruction is not followed, there will be consequences. When they failed to do what God said, they would suffer the same fate of every firstborn child in Egypt. Now, then they plunder the Egyptians. Think about this. Here are these people in bondage, millions of them. And God says, you go to the Egyptians and you ask whatever you need, gold, silver, clothing, food, whatever you need, you ask them and they'll give it to you. You know what? They gave it to them. You know why they gave it to them? They wanted them out of there. Because they thought if they don't get them out of there, we're all going to die. They were ready to get them out. They encouraged them to leave. Do you remember what the wise men and the magicians told Pharaoh? They said, this is the finger of God. You're fighting God. Look at Egypt is being destroyed around you. Let him go. But he's too stubborn. He's too stubborn. But after the death of the firstborn, he relents and he lets them go. And they plundered the Egyptians. And 600,000 men of war and all the people left in the middle of the night. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 37 through verse 51. And God led them by day in the pillar of a cloud and by night in a pillar of fire. And Pharaoh, his pride gets the best of him again. And he says, what have I done? I let all my workers go. I let all these people go. What did I do? And he puts all of his men and his chariots and he goes after them. That's a foolish thing to do. And so Israel rebels against God in Exodus 14. I want you to turn to Exodus 14. This is maybe what it looked like. They were in the valley. They're traveling. And the clouds leading them by the day. And the pillar of fire is leading them by the night. And they get to the borders of the Red Sea. Now, in Exodus chapter 14, there is a great statement made that I want you to look at. Now, I want you to notice something. What had they just saw in Egypt? What had they witnessed with their own eyes? They had just saw Egypt destroyed by God with their own eyes. And distinction was made to protect them in the land of Goshen. And when they left Egypt, they left with everything they needed. Surely they'll be thankful, right? Surely they'll be grateful. Look at verse 10. And Pharaoh drew near the children of Israel. They lifted up their eyes and beheld the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. And they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, you have taken us away to die in the wilderness. Why have you so dealt with us to bring us out of Egypt? Is it not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. Who cried to God? Who asked for help? Who wanted released? When did they say, leave us alone? They said, leave us alone when they began to have their task greater. But then after the plague began to happen, did you hear anything about leaving them alone? Did you hear anything about leaving them in Egypt? Had I been God, I would have sent them right back right then. And you know what? If God would have done that, who could have blamed him? And you know what people tell me today? Well, if I could see a miracle, I believe. These men witnessed a miracle, a nation witnessed miracle after miracle with their own eyes, and when they get to the Red Sea, all they can see is a problem. You know what? And I used to say when I was not very smart that the most stubborn and arrogant and unthankful people on earth were the Israelites. But I've learned to correct myself because we're even more stubborn and arrogant than them because we can read what God did and we do the same exact thing. Now, what is God going to do? God could send him back. But what does he do? Look at verse 13 and 14. And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you this day. For the Egyptian whom you see today, you will see them again no more forever. And the Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. You know what he said? Shut your mouth and watch and listen. Sometimes that's good advice. And that night, an east wind blew all night long. And while the east wind blew, a wall of water was on the left and on the right, and Moses led them on dry ground across the Red Sea. You know, I had the opportunity a number of years ago to go to Universal Studios and to watch how they did this in the Ten Commandments. And you know, when I saw it on TV, I was really impressed. I thought, man, that was the most realistic thing. And I saw when Charlton Heston stood there with Moses and put that staff up, and that wind blew those waves in that water, I thought, man, that must have been what it looked like. But when I had the opportunity to see it firsthand, I was greatly disappointed because they did it by sleight of hand. Moses didn't use sleight of hand. And you know, history tells us at this time there were 3 million Jews. Think how wide that had to be. Now, let me ask you a question. Why didn't God just pick them up and put them on the other side? He could have done that, couldn't he? He didn't do that. You know why? Because there was a part that they had to do. You see, they had to take a step of faith. They had to get out there in the middle of that water. And you know what they're smart enough to know? Whoever brought that water apart has the power to bring it back again. And they're going to have to trust God. And they had to take a step of faith. Now, when they take that step of faith and they go across, Israel crosses on dry ground. And then the Egyptians pursue. Can you imagine this? We're not going to get all of Exodus done tonight, but can you imagine this? Think about this for a minute. What did he just see happen to his nation? He saw it completely destroyed. He saw it obliterated. He lost every firstborn child in Egypt. And you know what he has the audacity to do? He's so stubborn, he went into the Red Sea. He went ahead and went in there. And you know what happened? The light came on when he got out there. And the people that were with him said, wait a minute. God's fighting for them. We can't defeat them. And you, they began to run. And can you picture this in your mind? I can. They begin to run to shore. And while they're running, the waters are closing in. And who's witnessing all of this? The Israelites. And you know what Exodus 15 is all about? Exodus 15 is about the song of Moses. It's a song of deliverance. And they thank God and they are grateful for His deliverance. And now they're never going to be unthankful and they're always going to be faithful from now on. Wrong. We don't even get 2 days' journey out of the Red Sea in Exodus chapter 15, where they're hungry and thirsty, and who do they begin to complain to? Moses. And they go to the waters of Rehoboam, and you know what they're ready to do? They're ready to go back to Egypt, and they're ready to stone Moses and Aaron. And somebody want to tell me God's not long-suffering? And God didn't really love those people? Somebody want to tell me that? After all that he did for them in Egypt, after he brought them out of Egypt, brought them across the Red Sea, and you know what? In Exodus 15, when they stood on the other side of the Red Sea, you know what happened? God fulfilled promise number one. They are now a free people, and they are the nation of Israel. And how did he do it? While they were in bondage, and while they were slaves in Egypt. Now, you think man's smarter than God? You think man has the ability to think that up and be able to do that? God did that, and when they were put to the test the first time after the Red Sea, they cry for water, and they're ready to stone Moses and Aaron, and they want to go back to Egypt. I'm not God. Because I'm telling you, I'd have sent them back. I wouldn't even hesitate. But what do we learn by this? Here's what we learn, brethren. We learn a flaw in Israel that would lead them eventually to be destroyed. And here's their flaw. They fear what they see more than what they know. They saw the Egyptians. They were fearful of that. They had no water, no food. And they were fearful of that. They feared what they could see, but they forgot what they know. And brethren, are we not exactly the same. We have things good in our life. Things are going well. Something happens. Something we didn't plan on. Something that is not very something we wanted to go through. And then what do? We begin to doubt. And we begin to complain. And then we begin to ask why. And we do the same thing that they did. We begin to forget what we know. And we let the circumstances that we see, we let that drive our actions and our thinking. Brethren, don't tell me man has changed. He has not. He is the same. And if it were not for the long suffering and the patience of God, we would have been gone a long, long time ago. And so when I read the book of Exodus, in the first few chapters of Exodus, the first 15, 16 chapters, we read God fulfilling promise number one. They now are a nation. They're free out of Egyptian bondage. And now what's the second thing that they have to have? If you got all those people, what do you need? You need a home. You need a land that you own. And when we, next time we study Exodus, we're going to talk about the second half of Exodus when God plans to fulfill promise number two, 3 months out of Egypt, but it gets delayed for 40 years. And that's another story we'll save for another time. I love the Old Testament because it teaches me more than any other thing that we serve a long-suffering and patient God. This flaw with the children of Israel would inevitably lead to their own destruction because they would walk by sight and not by faith. Brethren, we need to learn that lesson in our own life. We need to trust God and let God do what He says He will do. You remember what God said to us in Matthew 6 by His Son? Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these other things will be added unto you. Do we believe that? Or are we like the children of Israel? And do we have doubts by what we see instead of what we know? If you're here tonight and you're not a child of God, we don't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity of obeying the gospel. We want you to know that God loved you enough that He sent His Son, that He made a plan, that this plan would be to the remission of our sin that we did not have, a remedy of, and God was going to send a remedy in the form of His Son. His Son would come, He lived, He would die a cruel death upon the cross, and the shedding of His blood would provide the remedy for sin that we might have a relationship with God. If you're here and you're not a Christian and you need to obey the gospel by your hearing it, you're believing it, you're repenting of your past sin, confessing the belief you have of Christ in your heart, submitting to baptism to contact the blood of Christ, or if you're here and you are a child of God and you've not lived your life in the way that you know that you should have and you need the prayers in the church on your behalf, we'll pray with you and for you. And if we can help you in any way tonight, we bid you to come forward as together we stand, as we sing.